Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with Martin Super Duper Willis.
I'll take that, man.
Yeah, that's not too bad, Super Duper.
Yeah, it's not bad this week. Yeah.
I might have used that before, but it's a good one.
I don't think so.
No? Good.
I think I'd remember that one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you feeling Super Duper? How are you doing?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
Good, good. Yeah, I know you had some issues not too long ago, huh?
Yeah. No, I'm doing healthy. Health-wise, I'm doing really well. I am cold, however. The heat is out in my house, and it's actually down to the 30s and 40s
oh,
at night.
Oh, my so, gosh.
Yeah.
In your house?
It's supposed to be fixed tomorrow. Yeah. Whoa. Oh, in my house is in the just gets down to the high 40s right now.
Wow.
So it's cold, but I'm firing up the kitchen stove and the fireplaces tonight.
Yeah.
Keep warm.
Wow.
By tomorrow. Yeah.
Eek. Hopefully that gets taken care of pretty soon.
Yeah, tomorrow, they said. Yeah.
So my guest is Lee Spiegel of the Huffington Post. And what's really exciting about that, I don't know if you've noticed this, he's written a couple stories on the Podesta WikiLeaks, and of course, on the UFO side of things, so the UFO WikiLeaks. What's exciting about this is that these stories, typically his stories get in weird news, his UFO stories. And a lot of people complain, why are they in weird news? Why does this have to be in weird news? Why can't it be in regular news or science or something like that? And of course, he would love for that, and he always tries for that to happen. So it's not his fault. That's just where he works, and that's where they like to put the UFO stuff. But these two WikiLeaks stories he's written so far have been put in the politics section, and they've both made it to the front page.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's
pretty
great.
Cool.
Yeah.
And people may not realize that Huffington Post is actually a top 10 when it comes to online news source. So a lot of people looking at that stuff. So that's fun. So we'll talk about these stories. We'll talk about the UFO WikiLeaks. And it will be a lot of fun.
Can't wait.
Yay.
These were my favorites. Yep.
And you know what's going to come up? We'll have to plug this. Is we've got to do, like we did last year, you know, our end of year UFO thing.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Or maybe we'll do it in early January, but we'll do our year in review at some point with you and I and Lee, and that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, this will be your second one. You were a rookie last year.
That's right.
Yeah,
I didn't get picked on too bad.
No. Yeah. I pick on Lee, and he picks on me, and we all kind of get at each other because we, you know, what's the best stories. So, yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But before that, of course, we talk about UFOs in the news. What you got there, buddy?
Well, kind of local to me, this happened in Nashua, New Hampshire. And a military helicopter reported chasing a UFO. So in New Hampshire, there's one of the bigger cities in New Hampshire is called Nashua, South New Hampshire. And this is a report from MUFON written by Roger Marsh. This happened on October 15th of this year. And here's a quote. I heard an extremely loud, very low-flying helicopter somewhere over the woods behind my apartment in the southern area of Nashua, which is not at all normal occurrence here. the witness stated. My wife and two sons were present. We were getting ready for dinner. We grew increasingly alarmed as the helicopter sound grew louder and louder until we could feel it vibrating. So they, him and his son go out to the deck and they're looking over. They can't see this helicopter. And all of a sudden, they see this orb come up. It was a reddish orange like light, and it breaks over the tree line and it heads south and it goes in a straight line perpendicular across their view over the house line, the housetops. And so it didn't change course. It didn't wobble. And then it, the military looking helicopter came up out of the woods and started chasing, or it appeared that it was chasing it. And they couldn't see any visible markings on the helicopter to be sure. But a couple of things. This is very similar to an incident that happened in Nashua, the same town, in 2014, except that that craft that was being chased was more like a triangular. And if you Google that, you can see that that happened, like I said, back in 2014. And so that, to me, is very interesting. Anytime a helicopter is chasing something like that, particularly because you don't really hear anyone ever talk about it, you know, and if it is military and they're ordered not to speak about it, I can understand. But you think eventually more people would come out with that. And you know, you do hear a lot of talk about either jets or helicopters chasing these, whatever they are.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And there is actually, I haven't written about this or anything, but there is a WikiLeaks that just came out, I think today even, I was reading earlier, where an author who wrote a book about some military thing, but he had written John Podesta and Leslie Kane, or at least in regard to her book, because John Podesta does a foreword, and he was a military guy, and he was saying, you know, he was hanging around with these military guys when he wrote his book, and that they had some UFO stories. So it seemed like, you know, they were having these occurrences. But he sounded like they're just as baffled as anyone else. They catch him on radar and stuff, and they're like, yeah, I don't know what the hell that was. And they just call him a fast walker or a UFO, and that's it. They just tell stories like the rest of us. So that was kind of cool. Yeah. In fact, the story I was going to talk about is a military case.
Before you do that, just one of the things, you know, I'm thinking of. So when they see them on radar and they're chasing them, what would happen if they caught them?
I know they do. That's a great question. I mean, we have a lot of stories about the jets chasing and not catching them. So for instance, in Blue Book, there's many of these cases. Of course, the 1952 Washington, D.C. incident may be the most famous, where the pilots even said, we tried to vector in on them, but they disappeared every time we got close. So you never hear about them catching up. There is a case, a real famous one, in I think it was Chile. And I'm pretty sure it's Chile or Argentina. It's a South American country, and I can't remember right now. I'm blanking on exactly where. It's actually, it was in my talk at MUFON Symposium, but because it influenced them starting up a. But this jet chased one of the objects, and he was like, I was hitting that thing. That thing, my bullets were going into the object that would have shredded a truck, but it seemed to have no effect on this object. Like they were bouncing off or they were going through. But that's the closest I can recall or have heard. So maybe when or if they've ever caught up with them, maybe they never have. But if they have, maybe those cases are just a little more sensitive. And so we don't hear about them.
I wonder if when they're sent out to, if they're just sent out for observation only. You know, initially.
Who knows? I mean, you know, people make an argument that the first thing that we will probably do is send out probes, just like we're doing to Mars. We've got all kinds of probes and robots on Mars. That's what we would do. Even if we had a technology to send something really far, it would most likely be a probe, a satellite to check something out. So that's a possibility. It would make sense.
Actually, what I meant by that was I'm wondering if the military sends these jets out, you know, for observation. But no, I understand what you're saying, too, and I do agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, if we are being visited, you know, most likely we would be first visited by some type of probe or drone or of something.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily occupied.
Yep.
So good I know we point. Got way off topic on that one, didn't we?
No, not really. It's UFOs. It's all
yeah,
UFOs.
That's true.
So the one I wanted to talk about is in Georgia. And if you saw this story, maybe you got fooled by the picture because I did this great Photoshop job of what this person said he saw, which was this orb kind of watching him and his buddies. And actually, I'm just kidding. It was just kind of a very novice Photoshopping job I did. But it at least, you know, is trying to depict what happened. In fact, it looks kind of silly now that I look at my picture here, but it's cute maybe. But anyways, this is a Georgia military guy. He's at Fort Benning, Georgia. This is actually where they train snipers and stuff like this. But it was July 10th, 2005. And their platoon was doing some training. And the first half of the day, half of the platoon went out. And then the second half of the day, the rest of the platoon went out. He was in the second part. However, when some of the guys came back from the first half of the day, they said there was a UFO out there. They're like, there's this orb flying around out there. And he thought, what? You guys are crazy. They're making stuff up. But they went out there in the second half of the day, and he's like, sure enough, there was this orb flying around. It was an orb, and it was loud. It was making a loud buzzing noise. And he thought, you know, wow, this must be ours. Maybe they're testing it on us to observe us. He's like, I don't know what the heck this was. So he thinks it could be one of ours, but it was this silver, round object. He said there were no openings or anything. It was just a solid, silver, round object. It was fairly loud, making this loud buzzing noise, and observing them just over the treetops. So how weird is that? This was 2005.
Talk about probe. That sounds like one.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, but it... If it is, it must be using some sort of odd propulsion. It was buzzing loud, so maybe some electrical type of propulsion, or of course, assuming this is a true story, but that's pretty damn weird, isn't it? And I mean, if there is, it is a round probe, and if it is ours, you know. This could explain maybe the Homeland Security video over Puerto Rico, or even the more recent one, the police in the UK, who also captured something similar on their FLIR, something that is difficult, if not impossible to see by the eye, but they could see it on the FLIR. Pretty weird one. It's a pretty interesting read.
Another thing that comes to question on a sighting like this is, and it's another big question mark is, you know, it's like Rendlesham Force. It happens, you know, 3 days in a row or 5 days in a row or something like that. That's just bizarre in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Why whatever it is would stay in one area? I mean, if it can travel from wherever it is to get here, why does it stick in one little area? You know, I mean, that is another question.
Yep. What the hell's going on, man?
Right.
Weird stuff. Weird stuff. The last thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if I mentioned this last week or on your show, but did I talk about Denver International Airport? Probably not.
No.
This is just kind of cool, and I wrote a story on it, but the Denver International Airport, of course, there's a lot of conspiracy theories around it. I used to live in Denver, especially during the time of all these conspiracy pictures. I've got pictures of all the things that people say are strange and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, having been in the area and watched it, they've all pretty much been debunked. So, but what's interesting about this is that the airport itself has adopted these conspiracy theories, and they've kind of embraced them and have used them for marketing. So, which is kind of funny. So a few years ago, they were, in 2013, they were opening, or they're building this huge new area. It's kind of a travel center where the train is going to come up, the light rail train from downtown to the airport. And it's this cool train station and everything. And at the midway point of having this done in October of 2013, just a couple of years ago, they had a big party there to celebrate this midway point. And the party was conspiracy and alien themed. So they had all these alien things and stuff like this. And they had former mayors enact a phone call where they were pretending to, you know, be talking about aliens and stuff like this. So in fact,
Fife Symington? No.
No, this is in Denver. So
I know, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But I wrote about it, and then the PR people from the DIA sent me a video on it, too, that said, hey, you can put this in your story. So I did. Well, just this, I don't know when, but my cousin Jason actually sent this to me. That's how I found out. They put up an exhibit recently in the airport, a conspiracy exhibit. It's just a small little exhibit in this art area where they've got other art and everything. And they have a plaque there, or at least a stand there, with some of the stories about the conspiracies. And they have open minds, like, prominent on this thing. In fact, it's pretty much about our story.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, pretty cool. And then they also included the UFO Chronicles. They wrote about it, too. They probably just reposted our story, which, you know, is great. They've linked back to us, and we love UFO Chronicles. Yeah, so that's pretty funny. So you can see it there. And it's kind of fun because they also have this alien skull, because they, back during when they did this, they pretended to, like, uncover this alien skull and stuff like that as part of their marketing. So it's pretty fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Little extra publicity there.
Yeah, pretty cool of them.
They know you're a local.
Yep, I am a Denver native. In fact, I've got my Denver Broncos t-shirt on right now.
Orange, I'm sure.
It blue and orange. It's old school. It's pretty cool. All right, well, is there anything else you wanted to mention, my friend?
No, I'm about done. I got to get back to my freezing cold living room.
Yeah, I hope you keep warm. Hopefully you don't have to, like, start a fire with your furniture or something like that.
Yeah, it may come to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Uh-oh.
Well, looking forward to hearing Lee on your show.
Yeah, thanks. Let's go ahead and hear what he's got to say. I am super happy, as I always am, to be here with my good buddy, Lee Spiegel. How you doing, buddy?
I'm feeling great, and right back at you, you are my good buddy, Alejandro Rojas.
So, you have had a couple stories, both on the WikiLeaks UFO situation, and both of them have made the front page of Huffington Post.
Yeah, you know, it's always a crapshoot with that kind of stuff, because all of us who write for HuffPost, we all want the front page editors to find our stories and put them on the front page for the world to see. We never ask, we never request it, please take my story and put it on the front page. That would not seem right. But a lot of my stories lately have hit the front page, even stories that haven't been involved with UFOs or weird news. I've had a lot of science stories lately that I've written that have done that. And I'm very grateful for that, really. And the two WikiLeaks related stories involve some of these hacked emails. The first one was a series of emails in which it seems like the late Edgar Mitchell, Apollo Moonwalker, the sixth man to walk on the moon, was trying to get a meeting set up with John Podesta, as another man whose name has been in the news a lot lately. Podesta being the Hillary Clinton chairman of her campaign, and who has his own UFO background of trying to get the government to unlock UFO files that have been locked for decades. And so a couple of those emails involved Edgar Mitchell trying to get a meeting with Podesta to discuss what the government knows and what he might be able to do to help further the idea of disclosure, not just UFO disclosure, but extraterrestrial presence on Earth disclosure.
Well, and before we get into more detail, because we will, we'll unpack all of this story. In fact, that's what we'll do in this interview, because there's a lot to it. In fact, there's three stories, because there's also your other story, which is a great one. I don't think people know as well that you picked up on, which was her comment about Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. Which is, you know, earlier this year in March, I and many other people, I think you also did a story about this too. Hillary Clinton was on the Jimmy Kimmel show in March. And at one point in their conversation, Kimmel started asking her about UFOs. He did it with something like, you know, we've had your husband, Bill Clinton, here before. We've talked about UFOs. And I asked him if he bothered to look into UFOs. And he said that he did, and he found nothing. Is that true? Did he find nothing? And Hillary came right back and said, well, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Let's leave it at that for now.
Yeah.
Because we'll get more into Kimmel, this one.
Yeah,
So wait. Then the third story, we'll get into this. We'll get into all of these in detail, because we don't want the thumbnail on this one. We want the full the full Monty. And so the third, of course, being the Tom DeLonge story, so which is really interesting as well. But before we get into the details of each of these stories, I wanted to mention one other thing. Not only, which is, this is really significant, I think. Not only have these stories gotten on the front page of Huffington Post, they also are not in weird news. They're in the politics section.
Yeah.
Which is cool. You know, I mean, UFOs are breaching, at least at the Huffington Post. I know you get a lot of feedback. Why are your stories in weird? They should be elsewhere.
For the longest time, people had complained to me, Why are your UFO stories in weird? Don't you have a UFO section? And no, we didn't really have a UFO section, but I always had to kind of express why I thought that it belonged in weird, because if I didn't have any UFO stories in weird, I'd have them nowhere. Mm-hmm. And so I've been lucky to try to find some kind of angles and spins on some of these stories so they might be welcomed into the politics section and into the science section. And I've done stories where I focused on the Vatican interest in extraterrestrial life so that I could get it into the religion section. You know, I mean, it's okay for my stories to be in weird, but my attitude is enough is enough. It's not just weird. These stories belong in other places that gives the stories a little bit more credibility with the readers.
Is this the first time, though, your UFO stories have breached weird? These got in politics, but have you got a UFO? I don't think, because I know how science is at Huffington Post.
Yeah.
Have they done a UFO? I know they do ET stuff with like Shostak, and you've written on astrobiology. But has UFOs, have you been able to get them in science or elsewhere?
Yes. I mean, one of the things about about being on staff as a writer with HuffPost is that when I know that I'm going to be writing a story about something, and if it has anything to do with UFOs or the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, you know, like the SETI Institute, what I will do ahead of time is I'll go to I'll go to my friends in the science section and say, I'm working on this story. Would you like me to cross it over to your section as well? Mm-hmm. And I'll explain to them why I think it would work well for them. And they'll generally say yes, which means that what they're saying to me is, when your story is published, we'll put it up on our page.
Cool.
So I've tried to stay on top of that. I've tried to be aware that my stories can find a home on places other than Weird, because, you know, if I have a story, lots of my stories lately have been on Weird and science and politics. Well, if I want to send that story to someone out there in the world and say, look at my recent story about so-and-so in the politics section, I won't even tell them that it was in the Weird section. And it's not like I'm embarrassed that it's in Weird, but I want people to know that this whole thing that you and I write about and we research all the time, it's not just Weird. You know, there's a lot of serious stuff about what we write about. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to let people know that. And this is my way of saying to the people at HuffPost, listen, I think my story would work well in your section and in your section. Let me just give it to your section and hope that you'll put it up. And I'll tell you, what I do with every single story that I write, if I think that it might be on one of three sections, as soon as my stories are published and it's up there on at least on the Weird news page, I will go to the other sections just to see if they grabbed it, because mm-hmm. I want to know if it's somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into these particular stories now. Okay. And let's tackle the smallest one first, because it just has to do with one email. But I think this story is great. I think all of these are great. But this being the Jimmy Kimmel one. So you were explaining how Hillary was on Jimmy Kimmel in March. But that this email actually had to do with an appearance she had last year.
I didn't know about.
Yeah. But it gave us insight into that appearance last time. Very interesting insight. So go ahead and explain this. Sorry.
It helps to talk first about the March.
Okay.
She was very anxious to answer any of Jimmy Kimmel's questions about UFOs. She was almost too anxious to talk about unidentified.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, and she said that, you know, my husband couldn't come up with the information, but I will. When I'm elected president, I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that the classified files on UFOs will be released to the public, unless, of course, here's that caveat, unless they have something to do with national security. Well, you know, I'm sitting there watching the show, and I'm thinking, I'm yelling at the TV screen, Hillary, every credible UFO story has something to do with national security.
Yeah.
You know, right. No matter how you spin it. But in this exchange with Kimmel, she said, you know, Jimmy, there's a new name, and it's called, the way she said it was, unexplained aerial phenomenon. And I'm thinking, no, that's not right, Hillary. And then she said, and it's UAP. And she says that's the new nomenclature. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy said, I'm not sure I like that. I'd rather just keep calling them UFOs. And Hillary said, well, we can interchange them, you know, back and forth. And at that point, I said, is Jimmy going to ask her a question like, how do you know about this thing called UAP, you know, Madam Secretary? And he didn't follow up at all. I was sitting in my living room. I'm asking her the questions. You know, Hillary, tell us how you know this. How do you know this? Why did you mangle what UAP stands for? And they didn't go much further than that. So, okay, fine. So she tried to get the concept of UAPs out. And the public didn't know where she came up with that term. She didn't say that many scientists have been using that term since the late 1990s, since Dr. Richard Haynes, former NASA research scientist, came up with this phrase, and the actual phrase was unidentified aerial phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the actual phrase that talks about or describes in the aviation world what airline pilots come up against.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Richard Haynes, who is a founder and works with NARCAP. We're going to have Ted Rowe at the UFO Congress this year, who also works with NARCAP. And, you know, we know that Ted Rowe and Richard Haynes met with John Podesta and told him this, and that's how John Podesta knows about UAPs, and thus it got to Hillary. But we know more now on top of that.
Yeah, because obviously throughout this year, both Hillary and John Podesta have told reporters that they've been talking about UFOs and that Podesta has urged her and convinced her that she needs to make this information available. So obviously all this information that she thinks she's putting out there to the public to sound like she knows what she's talking about came mostly from John Podesta. Mm-hmm. But I was curious about how she found out about, you know, the whole UAP thing. And I didn't think anything more of it until last week when this other little teeny-weeny WikiLeaks email comes up, and the subject line, even a subject line, was mangled. I don't know if it was mangled by Podesta or someone else, but it basically said, how as Jimmy Kimmel.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Should have been how was. And I thought, well, what does that mean? And you go to read, just in the first paragraph, you realize that last November 2015, Hillary Clinton was on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. And she was talking about a variety of things that deal with issues that the country is really involved with, and climate change and things that are important. And the interview lasted just a couple of minutes, and apparently that was it. I mean, I actually went back into YouTube and I watched the interview from last November, and there was nothing mentioned about UFOs. And the WikiLeaks memo that we're talking about, the email, was apparently instigated by Podesta to Christina Shackey, I believe is her name. Christina is the deputy communications director for Hillary Clinton. And Podesta was writing to her saying, how was Jimmy Kimmel? He's basically saying, how did she do on Jimmy Kimmel Show last night? Because apparently he must have had some discussion either with the Kimmel people or with Hillary that they were going to talk UFOs. And the response—
Maybe, although we don't know for sure.
No, we don't know for sure. But the thing is, something had to have gone down, because in that first paragraph of this little WikiLeaks email, the deputy communications director, Christina, responded to Podesta saying she was great. She's a really good interviewee. She's going to look good on television. But he didn't ask her anything about UFOs. And she was very disappointed because she spent 5 minutes ahead of time practicing UAPs. And I went, whoa, this is cool. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm writing about this. I mean,
that was great.
In just two or three sentences, it was like, it was so much information right there,
mm-hmm.
which said to me, if she was practicing what UAPs are and what it stands for, that means she was prompted to do that, and probably from Podesta.
Uh-huh.
And she was ready to go on Jimmy Kimmel that night and talk UFOs, and it never happened.
Yeah. Now, I don't know that it was scheduled to happen. Some people have assumed that, and, you know, because they may have anticipated it for the same reason we have been excited. We were excited for him to interview Hillary because we anticipated him to ask about UFOs, because he had asked Bill about UFOs and he had asked Obama about UFOs. So we were all hoping he would ask her about UFOs, which luckily eventually he did. And I would imagine that it did get back to him that you know, Hillary was all prepared to talk about UAPs. He might have gone, what the hell is that? So maybe you should ask her next time, which.
Yeah. And you know, and the other thing is I've noticed, and maybe you have too, because both you and I have been kind of following this whole Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, let's talk about UFOs. Podesta has actually tweeted and has encouraged members of the media that when you're interviewing Hillary Clinton, ask her about UFOs. He has wanted her to talk about it, but he's wanted her to be doing it as a response to being asked about UFOs. As far as I know, since she started talking about UFOs, I don't think she's done any interviews in which she initiated the topic. It always came from someone else, but then she was happy to talk about it, but it never came from her, you know. And that and that's why when I wrote my story the other day about this whole Jimmy Kimmel thing, I included in my story that I think that someone from the Clinton camp should put a bug in her ear before the final debate with Trump, and that if Chris Wallace, the moderator, doesn't ask a question about UFOs, because that's how it always comes up, that they should kind of suggest to Hillary ahead of time, if he doesn't ask about UFOs, no matter how the debate is going, no matter how crazy it is between you and Trump, somehow if you can get the word UFO in there so that you initiate it,
why?
Now that would go viral. Just so I was hoping that would happen.
Yeah. Well, Steve Bassett and others, but I know Steve Bassett wrote some kind of email to Chris Wallace, and I think he was tweeting him or had some sort of campaign where he was hoping that would happen. He runs a Paradigm Research, a lobbyist guy, and he even had a story. I don't know if it's Washington Post. Somebody wrote a story that, you know, about Steve Bassett and how they're hoping that Hillary's going to talk about UFOs during the debate or something like that. But Wallace didn't bring it up, and those debates go by so quickly. They didn't get to many things people complain about. They didn't get to more minority issues, climate change, this and that, the pipeline or whatever. All issues which the public and maybe you, maybe I feel are a little more pressing than UFOs right now.
And that's okay. But I tried to impress on people that, so far in these debates, every time the moderators, whoever they happen to be, would ask an important question of Donald Trump, he would always go off topic. So it didn't matter. You know, he wasn't sticking to the questions that were being asked. And so I was trying to get people into the head of, if you can just get Hillary to say something about UFOs, and then the moderator would feel compelled to turn to Donald Trump and say, Mr. Trump, you have 2 minutes to respond.
Well, you know, and this is funny because you and I think, talked about this months ago. I know I've talked with others about it, but I'm sure we talked about it. Now that it's all almost over, I'm a bit surprised. I thought since Hillary started talking about UFOs, at some point, Trump would kind of throw that in her face and try to make fun of her over this topic, but he hasn't.
I know. And you know, the precedent for that was, I guess it was in the 2007 debates, and it was Tim Russert, the late Tim Russert from NBC's Meet the Press, who asked Representative Dennis Kucinich, was he from Ohio, I believe, and the question came up during one of the debates of we understand that you have claimed to have seen a UFO at some point in your life. Would you care to explain that? And Kucinich did explain it, but he never once said that it was spaceships. Never once said it was like little green men. He said, I once saw something that I couldn't explain. I thought it was pretty amazing. It hasn't been explained to me, and that was that. But everybody else blew it up, and well, he didn't become president, partially because
he quit soon after.
Yeah, and it goes back to that. It speaks to that ridicule factor that still exists in our culture. Mm-hmm. That anybody in any kind of a prominent position that might, you know, feel that it's okay for them to talk about any UFO encounter that they might have had or any kind of paranormal experience, if they decide to do it, they run the risk of ridicule from everybody all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Now,
but Hillary didn't seem to have that feeling. She was ready and willing to talk about it.
Yeah, and Podesta's always ready and willing to talk about it. He does bring it up himself, and that brings us to the second story, the other story you wrote with Edgar Mitchell. And what I found kind of surprising is that Edgar Mitchell was into our mutual friend John Alexander doesn't like me to use this word, but I think it's accurate, which is fringe, some of the fringe areas, because they are on the fringe areas of the belief, some of the more what might be seen as wild ideas, or certainly more harder to digest for the mainstream. But Podesta entertained meeting with Mitchell, and he even attempted to meet with Mitchell. And now you've interviewed him, so you know what he's into, Mitchell was.
He was very, from the time he came back to Earth, after his Apollo mission, it was a very spiritual and uplifting experience for him, and he went on to establish the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and he started studying with a lot of interesting people the idea that human consciousness is far more complex and interesting and different than we've ever been taught to believe. And he came under a lot of criticism for trying to get this kind of information out to the public, and he believed all of these things until he died, and he was very, very interested in talking to Podesta, because he believed through his contacts with other people that extraterrestrials are here. They've been here for a long time. They're not just here to visit us. It's not like they're out on a cruise and, oh, let's go check out the third planet from the sun. He believed that that there were some violent and some nonviolent ETs that were here, and that they wanted to help mankind. But we've heard stories like that a lot over the years from people with far fewer credentials than a guy like Edgar Mitchell. Mm-hmm. That's why I kept coming back to doing stories about him, because he wasn't off his rocker. He was really very highly regarded as a scientist and as a military pilot, and he walked on the moon. And when he just, you know, this was the guy he had. He was one of those. He wasn't one of the original astronauts who had the right stuff. But damn. He had the right stuff on so many other levels that a lot of the earlier astronauts never even dreamed of talking about. Mm-hmm. He was trying to help humans unlock the mysteries of the human mind. What could be wrong with that? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and so you can't blame Podesta for wanting to meet him just because of who he is and wanting to meet with him. I don't know if you saw it. This email, I'm sure you probably did. It came out later, I think, after your story, where Edgar Mitchell had, and of course, none of these emails actually were written by Mitchell, but they were written by colleagues. Some of them written by Rebecca Hardcastle, who you talked about, and she's in there. But she has written a blog about this, but where they said, we would also like to meet with the president. And there was a response, and the response said, well, why don't we meet with Podesta first before we take this to the president? I read it more along, well, hold on there. We'll talk to Podesta first and then go from there. But, of course, some of the people have read it that Podesta was definitely going to take this to the president because the president is in charge of all the UFO stuff. I don't know that I'd go that far. We don't know that he meant that at all. But
I have felt for years that because of Podesta's position first in the White House when he was Bill Clinton's chief of staff, And then for a year, he was Barack Obama's special consultant or advisor. And then when that ended, and he immediately became Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman. He had the ear of all of these people. You know, if he wanted to knock on the room, on the door of the Oval Office and go in and talk to Clinton or go in and talk to Obama and say, look, let's have a chat about UFOs. They would not have thrown him out of the office, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'll bet that they had some really interesting, provocative conversations. Because otherwise, why would Podesta continue to take this stand of trying to get the information out from the government? The government, you know, doesn't have the right, and the American people can handle the truth and blah blah blah. I have to know that, or I have to feel that he said these things to these presidents, mm-hmm. because he was a trusted member of the White House staff in a high position. Of course he must have had conversations with them.
It sounds like you are dying to interview Podesta and ask him these questions.
I have sent him a few emails, haven't heard back from him. He's a very busy man. And you know what? I like to say to myself to make me feel better, hey, I'm a busy guy too.
Well, the reason he should want to talk to you. But the reason I say that is because, of course, I'm dying to interview him. But I'm sure we're both very jealous that someone did get to interview him. And we know this through the WikiLeaks, or we actually knew this before the WikiLeaks, but we know more about it. But Tom DeLonge, Mr. Blink-182 rock star, got to interview him. This interview's recorded. Hopefully it'll come out. But this will be his first interview, really, where, I mean, KLAS, actually it was an affiliate of theirs, asked Podesta a couple UFO questions, but it was very short. He's written some about it with Leslie Kane. But a full-on interview with him about UFOs we really haven't seen. And I'm dying to see this documentary that Tom DeLonge put together.
You know, I'm really anxious to see the documentary too, and above and beyond Podesta's involvement with it because of other people, military people that are going to be in the documentary. But I'll tell you, I would be really surprised if any conversation that Tom DeLonge had with Podesta included Podesta opening up with amazing information of what he knows about the truth about UFOs. I doubt that has happened.
I think you're right. He's very tight-lipped. Even with the Las Vegas, was it a paper or a radio station? I think it was a business section of Las Vegas paper or something like that that asked the questions. But although this guy's a friend of George Knapp. Do you remember this about 6-9 months ago or something?
I remember the KLAS interview where it wasn't George doing the interview, but it was the KLAS political reporter, the political head, mm-hmm. and he was just sitting opposite Podesta, and there was nothing that Podesta said that he had said generically in any other UFO related interview before. He's been very careful about what he says from the days when he stood at the podium at the National Press Club in Washington and said it's time for the government to release the information. He hasn't given any other information about what UFOs are all about. So he either doesn't know, or he's unwilling to talk about it, or I don't know what other options are, but he hasn't said to anybody, here's what I think is going on, here's what I know is going on with UFOs and alien visits to planet Earth. I'm going to tell you right now, you can believe me because it's coming from me. There's been nothing like that from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know?
But, and that's what I love about these Tom DeLonge WikiLeaks, is that we now have at least an insight into what lengths he would go to. and him having access to everyone and anyone. If I were to sit down and say, okay, and they told me you can interview anybody you want about UFOs, who would you like to talk to if you could have a meeting about UFOs? I would want to talk to a guy in charge of Area 51. I would want to talk to a guy who is in charge or was one of the leaders at Wright-Patterson, which is where supposedly the Roswell craft and the aliens went, supposedly.
Yeah.
And right. We do know this. They investigated UFOs. And I would want to talk to someone who is a leader at Air Force Space Command. And Tom DeLonge and Podesta had a meeting with three of those types of people. How amazing is that?
Well, it's only amazing if they gave him useful, amazing information about what we're talking about here.
That's
because,
true.
You know, if they didn't say to him, okay, we're going to give you some answers, and you may have to darken our faces because we don't want people to know who we are, but we will tell you partially what's going on. You know, the truth is out there, and that there are things about UFOs and the centuries and centuries of encounters between maybe extraterrestrials and humans. There are things about this subject that the public probably really wouldn't be able to handle, and that the Vatican is aware of this information, and it's being very tight-lipped, even though it says the Vatican has said in recent years that they think it would be a great thing to learn that we have interplanetary brothers and sisters, because it wouldn't diminish religion, it would expand God's dominion.
So you know? You're saying the only way you would want to have a meeting with these guys is if they said that?
I would say I would like to have a meeting with someone who will let me know ahead of time that they will reveal some of the truth about it. And I would hope that that person could either be a sitting president or the Pope.
Okay. Here's why I disagree. I don't care what they would have. I don't care what they would tell me ahead of time.
Okay.
Because here's why. Because, for instance, I've learned so much from talking to any military person or NORAD person or NASA person I've talked to, even the astronauts who are skeptic. So, for instance, he's got an astronaut. I forget his name right now. He was at a MUFON symposium, but Tom DeLonge's got an image of him, or at least him talking in the trailer for his documentary. Although we know this guy is a skeptic because we got to interview him at the
MUFON Story Musgrave?
There you go, Story Musgrave. He disagrees with Edgar Mitchell and other astronauts who believe they've seen UFOs. But still, how interviewing John Alexander or Charles Holt or Nick Pope, people who, who are insiders, there's so much to learn from the inner workings, I feel, of all of this. And we do know, you know, that the Air Force investigated. So what happened with that? What do you guys do with that? I think I would have a ton of questions. I'd still really love to talk to them about all of this stuff. And according to Tom, I don't know if you've seen this because it's been taken down everywhere it's posted, but have you seen the trailer for his documentary?
Yes, and I thought it was really interesting.
It was, and he does say that he's learned, and I don't know who he allegedly learned this from, that it is a bigger secret than the public can handle, essentially.
Yeah. That's why he has there's a guy in near the end of the trailer who's in darkness. And he basically says that the truth about what's going on here, you couldn't handle. It's like Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you know what? I actually don't disagree with that. My whole attitude about UFOs has sort of evolved since I first started getting into it in 1975. Mm-hmm. And I was like a true believer back then. It's, wow, we're being visited and blah, blah, blah. They're coming from other planets. And my whole attitude has sort of changed because of the people that I've talked to and interviewed, like you. I'm sure your attitude has changed because you've mm-hmm. had the good fortune, like I have, of interviewing some amazing people and getting their thoughts and their perspectives on things. And I'm at the point now where I actually think that there's so much more to this whole UFO thing. John Alexander, perfect example. He's always saying to people, and he's considered a UFO skeptic, and a lot of the UFO community doesn't like his attitude, but he'll come right out and say to you, we're not asking the right questions. There's so much more to this UFO thing. Jacques Vallée will say the same thing. This is so much more complex than just interplanetary spaceships coming from somewhere. And I believe that now. I think that this is bigger than any of us really know. I don't know what it is, and I won't even speculate because I don't have the right to speculate because I don't know.
I agree with you. I mean, I had Alexander, speaking of him, and that's why he's on the top of my mind. He was the last person I interviewed, and I interviewed him about Skinwalker, the Skinwalker Ranch. And that's a perfect example of how this whole thing is much more complex than just E.T. coming down here and flying around and checking us out or something like that.
Right.
It's really – and if, of course – and that's what gets a little bit frustrating with SETI is that they take such a simplistic view of their mm-hmm. investigation. If this is intelligences beyond our own, it would be difficult for us to fathom their modalities or their motives. Yes. Just yeah. like, you know, whatever pet you may have sitting next to you, the reasons why you do what you do is a complete mystery to your pet. They just, the only actions they're most interested in is when you want to give them a scratch or you're going to feed them. But otherwise, whatever the hell you're doing around the house, they don't know what the hell you're up to.
I know. And that makes me think of that now famous Chapter 33 from Introductory Space Science, the Air Force Academy mm-hmm. science book from the 1960s, in which, and it was written by military personnel, and it was only for the eyes of Air Force cadets in Colorado Springs. And this chapter, a very extensive chapter, set out to explain to the cadets the current thinking at that point in the late 60s of what UFOs were. And they went through every possibility. It's, you know, misidentifications, astronomical things, hallucinations, blah, blah, blah. And they finally get down, after they eliminated all the others, then they finally come down with alien visitors. And they clearly tell the cadets, we're left with the unpleasant possibility of alien visitors to our planet, probably three or four groups of visitors at different stages of development. Mm-hmm. This is what the Air Force was telling their cadets. And at one point, they raised their own question. Why no contact? And they answer their own contact. They say that when you go to a zoo, you don't go there to contact the lizards. Mm-hmm. You know, and that any group of extraterrestrials, no matter how much more advanced they might be, either technologically or intellectually, they might look upon us as we would look upon insects. Mm-hmm. And so, again, and the only reason I even know about this chapter is because it was given to me in 1978 by the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek to use at the United Nations presentation that we put together.
Mm-hmm. So here is one interesting question for these two people that were in this meeting with Tom DeLonge and Podesta is, I mean, they're both, you know, the guy that worked at Wright-Patterson, he was in charge of the research labs, and the guy who was the special assistant to the commander of Air Force Space Command. Mm-hmm. Did you, when you were in your physics class at the Air Force Academy, Do you remember that chapter? And what do you remember of it? You know, and why was that chapter in there? I mean, those would be interesting questions to ask these guys, I think.
Yeah, because it was a real chapter. And you know, another thing about that chapter, this thing was in this physics book in like 1967, 68. And within the context of this chapter, the Air Force officers who wrote the chapter actually refer to research at the time of Jacques and Jeanine Vallée, his first wife. And at the end of the chapter, they have references to go to for if the cadets wanted to further their readers their information about UFOs. And you start reading down through the references, there are at least two or three references to Jacques Vallée books that were available at the time in 1967. It's like, what's going on here, folks? Why would they use Jacques Vallée's books as a reference to their cadets if, in fact, there's nothing to this UFO thing at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it could be, though. I mean, it's still possible. And, you know, I always stick to this because we have to prove otherwise. It's still possible that whoever put that chapter together, the couple of people who did, I think it was two people listed, two officers, they were just good researchers. I mean, they were people who went to the references we would have went to write a similar chapter if we were tasked to do so. But it doesn't necessarily mean they have any more information or much more than the general public.
Right. Right, but what I admire about that, and it's kind of what I admire about what you do, and I'll pat myself on the back about this too, is people who bother to do research about something. You know, there are too many people out there that just throw their opinions around and speculate. Mm-hmm. It's like our friend Stanton Friedman, a nuclear physicist. He always says that the debunkers have this mantra. The mantra is, don't bother me with the facts. My mind is already made up. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, it's great. And I mean, people will call, you might get this, I certainly get this, we know our friends get this, be called a skeptic. But it's important that, I don't know if I would say I want to believe more. I think there's more mystery out there. But unless I can prove it, you know, you can't go there, or at least to be disciplined and to really try to build on the mystery, you can't go there. So you have to stick with what you know.
Yeah.
And you know that too, because in journalism, that's how you write. You have to justify the statements you make in your stories.
We're living at a time. Sometimes I wish that I really was born 300 years in the future, at a time when we are part of a federation of planets.
Yeah, that would be great.
We're traveling at warp speed, but we're at a point now where scientists, astronomers, are actually starting to loosen up a little bit because of all of the galaxies that we now know are out there. Our human minds, we can't fathom, we can't understand what this must be like. Tens of millions of galaxies, each galaxy having billions of stars. And there are astronomers out there that are saying now that they believe that most of these stars have at least one planet orbiting them. The numbers are staggering of what's out there. When people say, well, there's no life out there, I just pull out a few pictures from the Hubble telescope and I say, you see this picture? You see all of those little dots in this picture? Yeah, those are stars. No, this is the Hubble deep field image that only shows galaxies. Mm-hmm. Every little dot that you see means it's just further away. These are galaxies with billions of stars with billions of planets. This, to me, is evidence of life because it can't be anything else.
Mm-hmm. Now, my last question, even though it'll probably spawn more conversation, but the last question is, do you feel you've been able to learn more than you knew, given these WikiLeaks emails.
I don't think that I've learned more than I knew, except in like little ways. Like, I did not know that last November Hillary was on the Jimmy Kimmel show and she had been practicing to talk about UFOs. I didn't know that. And that's why when I read the email, I jumped on it because I realized, oh, this is an interesting piece of information. I better write about this because I think that's news. So in that sense, by definition of what you just asked me, I'm always learning new things, but there's a part of me that wonders, do I really want to know the truth? Because I keep saying to people, it's so much more complex. Mm-hmm. We don't know what their agenda is, where they really come from, why are they here? Part of me is a little afraid to know the truth. Mm-hmm. And another part of me wants to know the truth. So I have these inner arguments with myself about just how far am I willing to take this?
Mm-hmm. Besides the wanting to know part, what is interesting about your answer there is that I was wanting to ask you this question, and a similar question came up when I was listening, because I'm a news hound, I'm listening to NPR, I'm listening to the news all the time. A similar question came up just a couple hours ago, or when I was listening to the radio. They were like, have we really learned anything from the WikiLeaks? And their answer, I think, was similar to what you said and applies in that not really. It's that we knew the story. We didn't know all these fine, minute details and everything, but we knew the story, and this is kind of just telling us what we already knew, but giving us almost these uncomfortable, voyeuristic type of insight into this. And the same is true. We know a little more, for instance, Jimmy Kimmel, Hillary being prepared. I have a lot more respect personally, actually, because I was a little skeptical of Tom DeLonge and who his sources really were. So I'm really floored, and I think it's really cool that he's done such great work to find some great sources. So he's doing some good work to talk to the right people. But other than that, we already knew Podesta was really into all this stuff. Now we just have a little more kind of dressing to the story. But it's not like we know a whole lot more that's mind-boggling or anything. Even though some people are out there speculating that some of this information may mean a lot more than I think we can read into it.
Even Podesta has said that he hasn't taken the time to go looking through all these WikiLeaks emails, so he can't verify if these are even accurate, or if somebody in the process of hacking them, they might have changed something or created new ones.
Right.
And so, that's always a possibility. Some people might say, well, that's just a cop-out. He knows that they're authentic, and he's just not willing to cop to it. Well, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how any other human being makes their own decisions about their actions. I only know about myself. I know how I decide to do or say something, and then I move forward with it. I can't speak for anybody else, and damn it, nobody can speak for anybody else. That's why all these skeptics and debunkers out there are claiming, well, this person said that, but they couldn't possibly mean that. Yeah. No, we don't know that. You can't make pronouncements or proclamations like that because you don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like I want to just say to people, just take care of your own business. Know what you're going to say and stick by it and let the chips fall where they may with other people. Because in the end, some truth is going to come out. And I'm just sorry that I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. But I'll just have to wait to come back in another body, and maybe I'll be part of the Starfleet Federation next time.
That would be pretty cool. But you might be some kind of funny-looking creature.
Well, I already am that.
From another planet or something. So, great. Anything else you want to say about the WikiLeaks, the UFOs, or Podesta?
I just would like people to to not jump on things really fast. I mean, he's a perfect example. Perfect. In the last couple of weeks, I've received a couple of emails from a guy. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's kind of become a correspondent of mine, one of my readers. And he's always asking me about, you know, Lee, what do you think of this? And what do you think of that? And why didn't this happen? Well, lately, he has sent me some emails basically saying, Lee, what's going on with Tom DeLonge? Why has he suddenly gone silent? And that'll be the end of this email. And then like a couple of days later, when I haven't responded to him, he'll say, Lee, it's been like 10 days since we've heard anything from Tom DeLonge. What's going on with that? And I finally responded to him and I said, look, I don't know what Tom DeLonge is thinking, what he's doing, who he's talking to. It's not my business. It's his business, what he does, the decisions that he makes in his life. And that's good enough for me. I don't have to go crazy wondering why haven't we heard from Tom DeLonge in 7 days. And so I suggest to you that you don't make yourself crazy. You know, live your life. You know, be open to possibilities and the wonder of new knowledge, but don't make yourself so crazy that it can give you ulcers. Because I think people are getting ulcers out of the anxiety of what's going on with UFOs. I mean, you and I, we haven't even touched upon, and we'll do this at some other point, on this whole other culture that's now called experiencers. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like a huge thing, like it never was 10 years ago, of people who strongly believe they've had some kind of real contact with some entities from somewhere else. And it's a lot of people. It has grown into the subculture of UFOs in this country, and it's international now too. It's amazing to watch it, and I'm not saying that I doubt people, but I'm just saying, please, everybody, keep an open mind with the things that you say, with the things that you think, and read as much as you can, listen to credible people on radio shows or in TV documentaries. Just gather as much information as you can so that when you decide you want to talk about UFOs at a party or somewhere, that you do it with an informed opinion, so that you do it saying to people, well, I believe that this is true because here's what I read, or here's I interviewed this person who told me this, and come at this, everybody, with an informed opinion, instead of just throwing this crap out there that indicates right away that you don't know what you're talking about. Have intelligent conversations with other people about this. You know, no matter what you believe, and I say this to everybody, everybody has an opinion about UFOs, whether they think it's crap or whether they think that invasion is imminent. Everybody has an opinion. And I think that's good. I think we should build on that. Yeah. And talk about it with everybody.
Even your favorite researchers have different opinions. Nobody has the same exact opinion. And there's nothing wrong with having different opinions.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong. There is no right or wrong. There's just knowledge. If we can just find the right pathway to the knowledge, no matter how it will make us all feel as inhabitants on planet Earth, you know, I'm hoping that the truth of UFOs won't be too much for us to handle. Mm-hmm. But I'm not convinced of that yet. So I kind of walk as carefully as I can, because I don't want to stumble onto someone's spaceship and be probed. Mm-hmm. You know, against my consent.
Yeah, that would not be fun, and that would be I don't need that sort of disclosure. Disprobler or something.
Disprobler.
Yeah, but it's funny, because while you were saying that, it was making me think of there's no good guy, there's no bad guy, there's just you and me, and we just disagree.
And we just disagree, and that's okay. Let's all
the young people won't know that that comes from a song.
Why can't we be friends?
Yeah, another song.
All we are saying is give peace a chance.
Yeah, give peace a chance, aliens. But thank you so much. This has been really interesting. You. They were great stories. I think it's so great that they got front page news and they were in the political section, which of course then causes other media outlets to take a look at this stuff. And I really love the Kimmel thing too. I think it was so neat that Hillary was practicing UAP and she still screwed it up.
You know, if I ever have the chance to interview her, one of the first things I'm going to ask her is, Madam President, I'm going to say, when you were practicing for that 5 minutes before that Kimmel show, what exactly were you practicing? What were you going over in your mind? Please tell me.
Your notes might have been a little off. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And, of course, people could go to the Huffington Post to see more. And you can go to the search section and put Lee Spiegel, and your stories will come up.
Well, and right back at you, I think if they go to the search section and write in Alejandro Rojas, they should find some cool stuff there, too.
They will get a couple stories there, too, but not as many as yours. So, and nothing, no front page news either. So,
well, you're a front page guy in my heart.
Oh, well, thanks, buddy. Well, it was great talking to you. Thank you so much for being on the show again. And we'll be talking soon. I mean, it's coming upon time to do our end of year review. That's only a couple months away.
I know. And the top stories of the year are already piling up.
Exactly. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you so much to Mr. Spiegel for joining us today to talk about the WikiLeaks. It's hard for me to say WikiLeaks without doing the WikiLeaks. So I apologize for that. However, you know, I think this is all making for a really interesting story, and who knows, there may be more to come. But I hope you enjoyed today's show. Remember, you can always find Lee at Huffington Post. You just go to the Huffington Post and in the search put Lee Spiegel. You'll be able to find his stories. You could search UFO, or you could even just do Huffington Lee Spiegel on Google. You could probably just do Lee Spiegel on Google and find his stuff too. He actually has a website, leespiegel.com, with a little more information, including information about his own incredible triangle UFO sighting. Cool stuff. Of course, we've interviewed him about that and many, many other things. So thank you so much to Lee for joining us on the show, and congratulations for your stories getting to the front page of Huffington Post. I mean, I know that's coveted. People are scrambling to get on the front page, and his UFO stories made it. So really cool. Not the first time his UFO stories have made it to the front page, but two in a row. That's probably the first time. So it's really cool. Otherwise, I want to thank, of course, Martin Willis for joining us in the morning with the news. Of course, join him on Podcast UFO, another podcast out there, another great one. And then also thank you to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. Remember, you can go to openminds.tv to find all of the news that Lee and Martin and I spoke about. You can also find information on watching videos. So we have a video portal where you can see all of the UFO lectures from scientists, from some of the top people in the field, from some very, very important people. On our video portal at openminds.tv. And most of those videos come from the UFO Congress. So the International UFO Congress, which is coming up here again in February. We have almost all of the speakers listed. We only have two more to list, and we're just getting our paperwork and ducks in a row. We do know who these people are, but I'm not going to tell you. Nanny, nanny. You're going to have to wait. But, of course, you guys are my coveted podcast listeners. Very VIPs to me. You're a VIP to me. I just thought that'd be cute because it rhymes. And so I usually give you the inside scoop. And I will, but not today. So soon I'll give you some more information. You'll be the first to hear it here on the Open Mind UFO podcast about who's coming up. But you're going to love it. So two more people to be listed soon. Otherwise, we have an incredible listing of cool speakers. Go to UFOCongress.com to check that out. That's right, UFOCongress.com. And you'll be able to see who we've got thus far. You'll be able to register. Right now, you can get early bird tickets, so you can get a discount. So go get your tickets ASAP. That's it. That's all I got to say. Except for thank you to you, the listener. Thank you all so much for joining me once again for Open Mind UFO Radio. We will talk to you next week, people. Until then, adios, muchachos.